Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance, with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance, neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling, to the sound of the breezes that blow.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my man, my main economist. The man who lets me bash economists right to his face, Bob Swarup, Dr. Bob Swarup from Candor Global, also the author of Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts. And I know there's one of those three are going to happen pretty soon. What do you say, Dr. Bob? How are you?
Doing well, Todd. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. But, as you and I both know, with what we both do, you're a conservative investor who's managing money, and I'm a gunslinger trader. But we're both missing the same ingredient, which is volatility, and there is none in any market that I can think of around the globe. What do you think?
I completely agree. I think there is no volatility at all. In fact, the only volatility you can see these days is in the price of Bitcoin. But if you look at volatility this year, it's pretty much spent most of the year flirting with single digits on the VIX. And it's just ridiculous. When you look at the levels of volatility, and you compare that to levels of uncertainty, there's a huge disconnect between the two. Because, of course, economic uncertainty or policy uncertainty is much larger. And yet, at the same time, it's just not feeding through into markets. And I mean, for that, unfortunately, whichever way you look at it, you can only really blame the sheer amount of liquidity that flooded the system, thanks to central banks and others.
Now, I know that you are not a Bitcoin fan. If I remember from our last conversation, you believe it's probably a gimmick or whatever. But let's talk about it for just a minute, okay? Bitcoin itself has obviously gone ballistic, as have many of the other cryptocurrencies. However, I mean, the CME and the CBOE are both adding products to their exchanges to now put up these products. Does that make them more favorable to you, less favorable, or still the same opinion?
Look, it starts to build more infrastructure into Bitcoin and kind of gives it something that's perhaps more sustainable. I mean, to me, let me put it this way. With Bitcoin, I can see there's a great amount of trading that can be done there and you can make returns from that perspective. But Bitcoin as a replacement currency isn't really there yet, because the problem is that if you're an ordinary person, an ordinary business that wants to use Bitcoin, the volatility of Bitcoin versus any other currency that you might use makes it very, very hard for you to hedge your risk. Now, with the CME and others introducing futures and so on, that will help to some extent, because then you start to create some of the hedging mechanisms move towards that. But you know what Bitcoin and, for that matter, Ethereum and all the other altcoins demonstrate, more than anything else, is the levels of fear and the levels of mistrust that are now infecting the financial system. Because the reason why, of course, there's a huge amount of surge in Bitcoin, part of it is speculative, but don't forget a large part of it also is because there's an enormous amount of currency, for example, just like China and elsewhere, that is seeking out other forms of value because they're terrified about the fact that, you know, they may no longer have their assets in an environment where governments are increasingly far more acquisitive of people's money.
So would you say, okay, so that, and that's a very good point. And I do say that people are, some people are now buying Bitcoin or others as almost a replacement for gold. And certainly if you had a lot of money that you wanted to put away, or you want, let's say you were in China and were leaving and had a lot of money to take, you could not just take it all out in gold and silver. You'd have to take it out in some other form because they're not going to let you through, right? I mean, is the Bitcoin or the cryptocurrency world a competitor of gold now? As a, you know, I'm not going to say it's a safe haven asset, but as a safe haven asset.
Well, you know, if you were the Chinese, if I'm the Russians, you know, a few years ago, the safe haven asset was actually property in London. You know, I mean, if you look at the UK property prices, they went rapidly rocketing through the roof, mainly because of a sheer amount of money pouring in from overseas investors who were looking for somewhere to park their cash, no questions asked. while they waited for the volatility in their own country's politics to settle down. I think Bitcoin has taken over from that because London property market these days is pretty illiquid and probably heading downwards. And gold, let's not forget, has two problems with it for anybody looking to get their money out of their country in a hurry. One, it weighs a ton. Secondly, it's got storage costs. Bitcoin at the moment doesn't weigh much and doesn't have any storage costs. So it's an attractive option. I think the real problem with Bitcoin at the moment is that it is something that is being driven at the moment still by a lot of mania. Now, that doesn't mean there's nothing fundamentally sound within there. But if you go look at pretty much any asset class, and you've seen this throughout history many times over, plenty of assets, enough people run in there, they will rally up far beyond what a reasonable valuation might be, and then they come crashing down. They can still keep going up after that longer term. But right now, when I look at the way Bitcoin has surged the last $1,000, for example, dollars so quickly, that strikes me more and more like that huge kind of parabolic rise, which is being driven by sentiment jumping on the bandwagon.
I mean, it would be like a bubble. I would agree. I 100% agree with that. Listen, I'll give you the quick background so everybody remembers. I was dead set against Bitcoin when it first started, which is why I don't have any. But I mean, I thought it was something that was somewhat phony at the time. But over time, I've become to believe that it's a real asset. And I see now many family offices now using Bitcoin as an investment asset. You know, I don't think anybody should take any of these cryptocurrencies and take all of their money. But certainly if someone were to take 5 or 10% of their liquid worth and we're going to invest in it, I mean, I do think if I'm looking at a chart, this is much of a bubble as it is right now and should probably sell off at some point. But of course, you're the guy who wrote the book, Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts. And this is certainly a mania and a boom, right?
Look, it is. The thing is that, you know, don't get me wrong. It may well have longer term legs. But, you know, if you look at this, but think back to when the Hunt brothers tried to corner the silver market, for example. You know, I mean, you can still have huge rallies. It doesn't mean that gold and silver weren't good investments, but people can cause it to go far beyond disconnecting from any form of reality. So, you know, I do think that people have to be very careful. I mean, there is actually, interestingly enough, if you want to talk about how bad the mania has become, I mean, Bitcoin, okay, at least has some history. But there's a whole bunch of course, other altcoins out there. And the one I always find quite funny is the, you know, Ethereum. There's actually a coin out there that's called Useless Ethereum. And it's if you look at the website, which is uetoken.com, they actually build themselves as the world's first 100% honest ICO, which says you're going to give it to some random person with internet money anyway, and they're probably going to take it and go buy stuff with it, probably electronics, to be honest. Seriously, don't buy these tokens. Give the money to me instead. And believe it or not, this guy somehow has managed to still raise $145,000 based on that pitch.
You know, it's funny because people will do a lot of crazy things, and that is one of them. And again, I think that, you know, again, is it real? I mean, it's real because it's trading. But is it going to be real? I have to give some credibility to it because of the mercantile exchange, because of the options exchange. Now, whether they're doing it out of the factor of greed and they figure they can make some easy money clearing this stuff, I don't really know the answer to that. But I do know that it, yeah. Go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
All right. So, I mean, what I'm saying is that, you know, again, I think, in my opinion, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about this. But I think this is almost the start of a financial revolution, because I think one of the things that we're seeing flowing into is people are so sick and tired of not only the Federal Reserve, but the rest of the central banks around the world, that they are now moving away from where those guys have control because they've totally destroyed the financial system. But this is my guy, Dr. Bob Swarup, the number one economist who I can talk about and tell that economists are full of it, and he'll agree. But he is from Candor Global, but also the author of Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts. And you ought to check it out because I'm just telling you, he tells it like it is, always straight, and really understands the investing business. But we're going to come back with Dr. Bob after the break. This is The Bubba Show. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm. and download the Bubba Show every single day. And for those of you who know that I've been doing the high school investing for 6 years and have financed it solely by myself, we are now looking for some help. If you want to go to patreon.com/BubbaTrading, you can certainly make a contribution. And for those who do, I will do a special webinar and also a couple other things. But in the meantime, this is the Bubba Show. We're with Dr. Bob Swarup. We'll be back after the break with more from Dr. Bob. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Dr. Bob Swarup, Camdor Global, but also the author of Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts. So, Dr. Bob, okay, I asked you a question before I went to break. Is this a form of a potential revolution, and be it financial, not with guns, but is this a way that people are starting to pull away from the control and the purse strings of the Federal Reserve and other central banks around the world?
Well, it's a challenge to the monopoly that every currency runs within its own nation state. You know, it reminds me of an episode in history which most people have never heard of, but which I was looking at when I did my book, which is back in Birmingham in the 1780s in England. You actually had a situation where button manufacturers actually began to mint their own coins. And this was as a sort of threat to the Royal Mint, because the Royal Mint was running out of coinage and people beginning to lose faith. So they began to mint their own coins. And these tokens, and they were actually called, you know, tradesmen's tokens, rapidly became very, very popular. There's a whole bunch of speculative bubbles in them. But interestingly enough, they gradually replaced the British pound as the most popular currency for wages, retail sales, everything. And that whole situation lasted for maybe about 35, 40 years, until the government suddenly came out and outlawed all money except the British pound sterling. So, you know, when I look at Bitcoin and all the other kind of cousins it has these days, it kind of reminds me of that phase, which is, it goes back to that notion of mistrust. I mean, the problem is that, frankly speaking, when you look at the current state financial system, any notion of a functioning market is gone. You know, the pricing mechanism is dead. That's why everything is expensive. That's why nobody really who invests money knows where to put their money. And so in that scenario, anything that promises to be a store of value, whether it is or isn't, immediately is attractive. And so I think the revolution you have here is probably the one that's still bubbling in many different ways, which is, it's not just about Bitcoin. It's also about, you know, populism. It's about Brexit. It's about all of these issues which are coming through just as a huge lack of trust in today's system. Now, how that breaks, I think we'll be interested to see, but I think it's going to be messy no matter what.
Okay, now, the one very important question, I get really perturbed at a lot of things. I get pissed off a lot. I mean, I'm a pissed off kind of guy anyways. But one of the things that really pisses me off when the very wealthy who love the Federal Reserve System because it's made them wealthier, and they put them like on the company payroll, basically. But there's a gentleman by the name of Kevin O'Leary who's on Shark Tank all the time, and he sold this company for $1 billion, whatever it is. And he's a big wheeler dealer now and all this whole thing. And he made a big statement, a big spit stink, almost like Jamie Dimon, and says that Bitcoin is not a currency. And I say to that, BS. It doesn't matter. If somebody would take a rock for something of value, the exchange of wealth would make the rock a currency. What do you say?
I completely agree. I mean, it's got to do with whatever people perceive as a store of value. In fact, you know, I think I've told this example before, but if you go back to England in the 1100s, we had a situation where, because they didn't have enough coin to mint, people began to use pieces of wood as a functioning currency. So what they would do is they would carve notches in the wood like an abacus that told you how much money you owed to someone. You would then split the wood in half, and debtor and creditor would take one half each. And of course, you would know it was the right piece of wood because you could line the two sides up when the deal was being transacted. That replaced, by the way, most currency in the UK and functioned as a system for 7 centuries. The government even took taxes in the form of these wooden sticks. You know, so frankly speaking, if a piece of wood can become currency, anything can. A piece of gold doesn't really matter. It's all to do with human nature. And it's got to do with the fact that people desperately need to have a belief that whatever they're transacting in holds value. Because if it doesn't, then the point of transaction goes away. What's the point of transacting if whatever you transact in is going to leave, it's going to lose value overnight?
Okay, so... You know, so this whole thing, and of course you did reference the Hunt brothers, and just to remind everybody, if you want to make $1 million in the market, just give the Hunt brothers $10 million and they'll show you how to turn it into $1 million because of their greed. And of course, that is the end of all markets when the greed comes in. And if you remember, Dr. Bob, when the Hunt brothers tried to corner silver, and the Chicago Board of Options or Trade came to them and said, hey, look, you're screwing up the market. We'll give you all your profit right now. We'll pay you off. Just get out of the market and get out. And of course, the Hunt brothers said, screw you. We're going to corner the market, basically. And the Board of Trade said, okay, screw you. Liquidation only. And of course, they lost all their money. They lost that money at that particular time. But that is part of that is always a sign of the ending. So does this mania in Bitcoin, does this mania in the other cryptocurrencies, does this lack of volatility in the general markets suggest to you that maybe we're coming near the end of this particular bull run?
I think we are getting close to the end. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what the catalyst is that actually punctures this bull run. I mean, Bitcoin, I think, you know, it's probably one of the last few asset classes that hadn't seen that enormous surge that the way others have. I mean, it's very hard now to know where to put your money. I mean, there is very little out there that shows any real value. And certainly from the point of view of investing over a short-term horizon, you just don't know where to go. And I think when you're in that situation, you've basically got more and more money that's piling up on the sidelines that is just waiting for a bonfire to burn it.
Now, you know, Dr. Bob, we you and I talk a lot about a lot of different things over time. And of course, we've got debt has always been one of the big things we've talked about. And of course, you're from the belief, you say that eventually they're going to have to what's the word, forgive a lot of this debt. But now nobody talks about debt in this market. We've just now surpassed, I mean, I think we did a long time ago, but of course, according to the record, you know, according to the numbers, I believe in Santa Claus. But now, you know, obviously auto loan debt and delinquencies and student debt is much bigger than the housing bubble ever was. And of course, the housing assets were at least hard assets that you could hold on to, whether you were losing value or not. You had something, you know, the debt that is today has no value and is going to continue to lose value on a daily basis. Yet nobody wants to discuss debt. Why is that?
Probably because it threatens the foundations of the entire system. I mean, you know, if you think about it this way, every piece of debt out there is also an asset on somebody else's balance sheet. So, you know, whether it's student loan debt, auto loans, whatever, there are enough funds, banks, you know, pension plans, plenty of people out there who hold these pieces of debt as assets. So if you start to believe that this stuff just isn't worth that much, then frankly speaking, that is the bonfire of the assets that is beckoning. Now, the problem is that I think you need that bonfire for two very good reasons. One is, to your point, a lot of the debt, frankly speaking, is crap. The second thing is that the burning of debt is the only way you restore any measure of real equity. Now, I'm not going to use the word equality, I'm going to say equity because it's about having everyone a fair chance into the system. You know, the truth of the matter is that you made a point earlier about how, in many ways, the whole kind of wealth creation got completely out of whack. And that's the problem. I mean, the financialization and the kind of, you know, subduing of any market spirits over the last few years has meant that there's a lot of money being created out of thin air, which doesn't really belong in the system. I mean, it's the most enormous misallocation of capital. And a lot of that capital, in reality, is non-existent. I mean, it's completely right that it should go away. Because if you don't, you're not going to fix the system. I mean, this economy at the moment, whether it's the UK, the US, any other country in the world, desperately needs structural reforms. It desperately needs capital to flow into a way that is actually creating future wealth rather than simply iterating itself endlessly in an endless form of leverage.
And of course, we aren't going to see that and probably not going to see that for a long time because, as you have said, and I think this also relates down to the fractional banking world, which, you know, I don't know if you're a fan of it or not. I'm not. I think that fractional banking is a farce. I think that's just another way that they can create more money out of thin air because I'm from the school. And I'm going to ask you this when we come back from the break. I don't believe that 95% of the banks have enough in reserve to back up what they're lending out to begin with. And they're not lending very much today because they don't have enough spread in the interest rate market. But that will be for Dr. Bob when we come back from the break. He is Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global and also the author of Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts. And I encourage you to go to Amazon and check out his book because, again, you'll get a good feel for how he thinks about the type of markets we are in now because they all do run in cycles. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And, of course, go to libertytalk.fm. You can download The Bubba Show every single day and get guys like Dr. Bob who know what's going on. And also go to bubbatrading.com. Amazon, where you can actually sign up for my daily updates, which are videoed every day right after the market close, and they are free. I will email them to you as soon as I finish them. So go to BubbaTrading.com and check that out. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be back with more with Dr. Bob Swarup after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global, and also the author, the famous author of Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts. Go check it out at Amazon. Go download it. Go buy it. The man needs some cash. All right. So, Dr. Bob, I'm anti-fractional banking. I think that it's a hoax, and I think that it's just another way that the banks can create money out of thin air, which really all it does is takes away the amount of cash I have, and I don't like it. But tell me why I'm right, or tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, I think the fractionalization of banking has really gotten a bit out of hand, because you know the sheer amount of debt that's being created has just meant that leverage upon leverage is interesting, because you know, if you look at a lot of the new kind of funds that quite green in the last few years, you know, all these private debt funds, for example, that came in and tried to, you know, do the whole kind of disruption of banking, the disintermediation and so on, as banking retreat from certain areas. It's very interesting because a lot of those funds are now themselves raising debt so they can actually put more money to work. So ironically, you're getting a fractionalization even of the private debt space. In many ways, I think it's always inevitable, because even when you had a gold standard, you still actually had fractional banking even occurring back then. Because the problem is, the moment somebody has a pool of capital and they think they can store a value, they will then rapidly start to allocate it multiple times, in the knowing that the probability of everything coming home to roost at once is very low. I think the problem today is that people have completely lost sight, where you have a problem where the financial markets have complete disconnect from the underlying economy. And so the levels of leverage have rapidly multiplied with no real sense of how that all links back to the real economy. And a good example of that is what happened back in what people sometimes think of as the Dark Ages, which is ironic because actually before the Renaissance that everyone knows, there's actually another Renaissance, except the ending was so catastrophic, no one ever remembers it anymore. And one of the reasons it happened was because banking back then became very complex, and the banks created, by the way, things like mortgages and securities, and they even used to sell futures against wool, for example. But at some point, they completely forgot that all the wool futures, for example, they sold depended on sheep and fields that needed to be sheared. They forgot that all the mortgages they were issuing and all this land needed farmers to till it. And so after a while, there was no basis left to all the financial innovation. And this is the problem, because ultimately every piece of, you know, debt, equity, anything that floats around needs to have a link back to a hard asset, to something in the real economy, some creation of value. And if you lose that link, then I think you end up in the mess that you are in right now.
So, you know, again, you know, you mentioned this, that it's on somebody's balance sheet, which is the same as debt in the way that they show the accounting. I say that we do a lot of phony accounting, and I don't think it's very healthy. And of course, I think that's part of the more of the Keynesian way of economics. And, you know, you have this artificial accounting that doesn't seem to ever work out right. And of course, you've got a bunch of economists that, you know, we keep hearing how good the economy is. So I'm going to ask you, you're an economist. how good is the United States economy right now from your perspective? And you can be honest. If I'm wrong, again, I don't mind being wrong. I just don't see what they keep telling me that is there. I think it's a pile of crap. But you tell me. I want to know from a guy who understands it and knows.
All right. Well, I think an economy has two dimensions. There is the stuff that you see in numbers, and by which measure the U.S. economy looks fine. It seems to be doing better than most parts of the world. But then the other dimension is the social dimension, from which perspective the U.S. economy sucks. Because to be honest, you would not have had the level of upheaval in the U.S. on the political scene if people felt content with the economy. I mean, the problem with the economy right now is I think we have what I would call the fetish of GDP, which is everything is measured and quantified, and no one ever thinks at all about what that really means in the context of an economy and a society. So if you look at GDP, we just think that, you know, a positive GDP number is great and a negative GDP number is awful. The problem is that GDP was invented by a civil servant back in the 1920s as a way of getting a quick fix when you had to fill out a bunch of reports. So it doesn't necessarily tell you that much. For example, if you and I go out, have a wonderful night out, drink a whole load of champagne, have a few shots of vodka and all the rest of it, we will have a great amount, we will have a great time, and we will contribute that amount to GDP. If we take that same amount of money and put it into a factory or use it to mine something or anything like that which adds value, it has a multiplier effect that only comes through over time, does not come through today. Unfortunately, as far as GDP is concerned, they both have the exact same impact. Now, when you have that kind of arbitrage, it means that you end up creating what we have today, which is this enormous this emphasis on consumption, this notion that we must consume, consume, consume all the time. And therefore, every economist, every policymaker desperately wants to keep demand up. Now, the problem is demand can only be kept artificially high for so long. At some point, you decide the best way to keep demand up is to have more and more debt in a system because the debt fuels demand. Now, that debt also fuels GDP growth. Unfortunately, the more you inflate that bubble, the hollower it becomes from within. And that's the problem you have today, which is that you have an economy that on the face of it is growing. You have an economy that on the face of it is expanding, but within it is rapidly hollowing out. And that is the real danger. You have an economy now that I would say is a bit like a spinning top. It's in equilibrium right now, but unfortunately, it only takes the slightest push one way or the other to make the whole thing topple over rather than elegantly.
So, I mean, my contention here is that it's a mirage. And I think you're agreeing with that in a way that, you know, again, it's not, we're not seeing real growth. There is really zero CapEx spending, and the companies that are making all the money, and God bless them, I'm a fan of capitalism, but they're making money, but they're not reinvesting the money in the economy. They're reinvesting the money in buying back their stock, which creates a higher stock price, but it does not improve the economy, nor does it increase jobs, because, you know, as low as the unemployment number is in the United States, and as good as that our president wants to say jobs are, in my opinion, jobs are may have never been worse. What do you say?
Well, I think the problem in the U.S. is not one of employment. It's probably more one of the fact that general labor force participation is hugely down compared to previous years. And also, you have what I would call the problem of underemployment rather than unemployment, which is, you know, you have a lot of people who are doing jobs, they just hate the jobs they've got, and they feel that, you know, they've got a bum deal. Now, technically speaking, they're employed. On the other hand, you wouldn't exactly call that a happy workforce. Now, if they're not very happy, that comes through in many, many different ways, such as, for example, all the political turmoil we see. You know, I mean, there is this notion that somehow 2017 was this era of peak populism, that, you know, actually, when you look at what happened in Europe and elsewhere, that maybe we've seen the worst of it and it's all going to get better. No, I don't think so. I think, unfortunately, this is probably just a gentle pause and it carries on getting worse. It doesn't get better. It just comes through in other different ways, Bitcoin being one example. So, no, the economy, I don't think, is very healthy. I think it's a deeply dysfunctional economy. And it's one that, unfortunately, is completely disconnected from society. Financial markets, perversely enough, of course, love this, because for financial markets, you know, they've reached into a point where really they're just a bunch of methadone addicts who want that extra fix every single quarter, every single month, every single year. And as long as you keep getting it, whether it's monetary easing or fiscal easing or the promise of tax cuts and all the rest of it, they'll keep happily going back to that pipe every single time.
So, I mean, I guess, and of course, we're seeing, you know, like a lot of things happen in the euro currency, in the euro land over there. And of course, Catalonia, that they want to, they're leaving or whatever. Another one wants to bite the dust. What are your thoughts to all that stuff that's going on?
Well, Europe is fragile. I mean, Catalonia, you know, I think people can't treat it as a one-off. You have the same tensions. You know, Brexit is a bigger example of that. If you look at what's happened in Germany right now, I mean, Angela Merkel has, you know, seen her attempts to form a coalition completely fall apart. She's now got, you know, just under a month to try and form a government, and she can't. It's a snap election. So, you know, if the strongest economy in Europe cannot give a mandate to the leader of that economy because their people don't feel they're doing a good enough job, that tells you that despite all the headline numbers, something is wrong in the state of Germany, as it were. So, you know, I think Europe, unfortunately, has a lot of challenges in many ways. The irony of Brexit is that Brexit's allowed them to push their internal challenges away to one side. You know, they managed to kind of unite themselves against a common enemy, the British, as it were. So the British are doing the same thing to the Europeans for the Americans a couple of centuries ago. But, you know, it allows the Europeans to ignore their own problems for a little while. You know, Catalonia, in many ways, was shocking because you had a clear example there of another population turning around and emphatically rejecting the status quo, at least a big part of it did. And at the same time, the response from the Europeans was really one of silence, because if you don't want to hear it, you don't want to know it.
So, you know, Dr. Rao, when we come back for the break, I want to talk to you about, and I'm sure you've looked at it because I know you, that's who you are, the tax plan, because in my opinion, the tax plan is a bunch of crap. It didn't do anything for small business. And in fact, I believe that President Trump has settled because he's like starving for a victory because of he can't even get his own party to vote for him, let alone get anybody else. I think that's one of the problems that we are with. Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global and also the author of Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts. And go buy his book, Amazon. Check it out. Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts by Dr. Bob Swarup. And this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm every single day. First of all, we've got all the content you need, but you get to download The Bubba Show. And we're trying to get to 1 million downloads a month and need your help. So go there and push those buttons. Turn those machines back on. This is The Bubba Show. And we're with Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global, author of Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts. And make sure you check out patreon.com/Bubba Trading and help us out here. Help us promote financial literacy to kids. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break with more with Dr. Bob Swarup. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back.
1,000 beers in 28 years.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global. Calling from London, and it's a late hour here for him. But Dr. Bob, okay, so the tax plan, in my opinion, is a joke. I think it does nothing for the middle class, and I think it actually tortures even further small business, because small business is already disadvantaged because of the regulatory environment, because of the cost of purchasing goods. Their purchasing power is not anywhere near their big company competition. And then throw in that they're going to have to pay a 5% more tax, basically, because it's 20 to 25%. What's your thoughts on this wonderful tax plan they've come up with?
Look, I think the universal opinion across pretty much all parts of the divide is that it's a tax plan that doesn't work. It's a tax plan that I think ultimately does not achieve what it's trying to, what it claims to do, which is to actually get an economy that's functioning. And I think you're right. It doesn't really work on many levels. I mean, one of the problems you have is that, you know, in some ways it's a pity that inequality has been, you know, kind of captured by the left at their cause. Inequality is something that affects everyone, irrespective of whether you're left-wing or right-wing, because frankly speaking, a functioning economy is one that has equity within it. In other words, everyone has an equal chance. The middle class, to me, is critical in that. The middle class, ironically, I guess, because the middle class always is the reasonable class, it doesn't have an extreme view one way or the other. It's kind of one that's always easy to ignore. But if you think about the middle class in the context of an economy and a society, the middle class is what embodies labor mobility and social mobility. Because frankly speaking, as long as you have a middle class, anyone in the working class can see a way out and a way upwards. Anyone in the middle class can always feel that they can get the upper class and back and forth again. That ability to go back and forth, that mobility is what makes an economy vibrant. And the U.S. economy, by the way, if you look at previous decades and previous centuries, actually demonstrate a lot of mobility within deciles and percentiles. And that's something that's been probably declining in the last few years. So, you know, I think the middle class, unfortunately, is something that really needs a lot more nurturing. And nothing I see in the tax plan appears to do that. All I see in the tax plan is a bunch of giveaways that will actually end up boosting stock prices that bit further, because everyone will look forward to a repatriation of some sort or the other. Everyone will look forward to, you know, lower taxation will come through in higher profits for the big corporations. But the truth of the matter is that all of that, to your point earlier, goes back into more buybacks, no real actual investment into an economy. So it doesn't help turn things around. In fact, it's this rather stupid kind of version of trickle-down economics that somehow if you just throw lots of money in there, it'll somehow get better. And I'm amazed that they haven't learned the mistake of the last 10 years from what the central banks did, which is throwing a lot of money at a problem does not make it better. Whether that's monetary easing or fiscal easing makes no difference. If you throw money without a real plan, you can't expect things to be better.
Now, Dr. Bob, I believe that the markets are searching and dying for a reason to go lower. I think that the market wants to correct, but until there is a legitimate reason, and we know it's not nuclear war because the Korean thing didn't affect the markets. We know it's not terrorism anymore. So what is it in your mind that might be the factor that pushes this market from the buy side to the sell side for a while? Because we know the markets go up over time. I mean, that's just, you know, that's common nature. I mean, common knowledge since, you know, the beginning of time, it goes up about 8 to 9% year over year, just not every year. But in my eyes, it's waiting for a reason to break down, and the reason is to be determined. Do you have any clues or any thoughts to what that reason might be?
It's hard to spot the catalyst right now. I think, you know, the problem with these catalysts is they always come by in unexpected corners. And I think, you know, if you go back to 07, when the Bear Stearns funds went under, it wasn't so much the funds that caused the problem, it was what they exposed. If I look at the markets right now, you know, I mean, the cracks will appear always in the debt space somewhere. And I think when I look at where you have the issue, I think there are a lot of debt that sits in the high yield space that has been driven down lower and lower in terms of yield. And I think where it will probably appear is you will have, you know, some of the large companies there starting to find that the debt becomes unstuck. And what that will probably do is expose some of the problems in the ETF space. Because if you look at the ETF space, that's an area where, for example, in an equity fund, there's enough liquidity and the ETF makes sense. In debt, as long as you've only got upside volatility, ETFs work fine. But the problem is if it ever starts to go south in a big way, an ETF becomes a little bit like an investment trust, which will start trading at a discount. And the moment that happens, you actually create a major problem because people's perception of the stability of the ETF universe, particularly when it comes to fixed income, changes. And that is what then leads to waves of panic selling and so on. So, you know, I think the crisis probably starts with defaults and moves into ETF space is probably my feeling.
That makes sense. I mean, that's why I ask you, because you got the answers. I don't, but you got them. And that's always the interesting thing. So, Dr. Bob, I look around and, of course, I'm seeing a lot of stuff that isn't very good. And, you know, I ask you, OK, when you look at the overall economy and you look at what's going on with the currencies and you look at all of these other things. And then, of course, you keep hearing, and at least in the United States, inflation. We need inflation. Well, they only need inflation so I can pay more taxes. What the hell do I need inflation for that's produced or artificially induced by the Federal Reserve? What good does that do me?
Yeah, inflation will be a real problem if it ever actually comes in. Because I think if inflation was to ever come in, at that point, I think you would have a violent reaction within society. Because right now, people feel constrained enough in terms of cost of living, quality of living, etc., that if you start throwing inflation in that mix, I think people would react very violently to that. I think the truth of the matter is that you are heading for what I would call a biflationary environment. It's a term that people don't often come across, nor is an environment people are used to. But to me, a biflationary environment is where you start finding that things that are real assets in your life, i.e. food, energy, etc., start to climb simply because they become a lot more precious. And at the same time, the assets you own rapidly start to deleverage because they're sinking as the financial asset slowly starts to go back towards meeting the economic underlying asset and somewhere. So I think there you end up in the worst of both worlds. You have deleveraging of what you believe are your assets. At the same time, you have inflation amongst what you actually utilize on a day-to-day basis. I think that's the nightmare situation, because that's something I think no central bank is prepared for. That is something no government really knows how to handle, because in many ways, most monetary policy, I think of the world as being either inflationary or deflationary. They find it very hard to conceive of a world which might be both.
Well, let me ask you this question, Dr. Bob. Is the central bank prepared for anything?
Oh, God, no. I mean, they've been relying so much on forward guidance. I mean, you know, this is the kind of equivalent of, you know, let us pray and hope for the best.
Right.
And I think the problem is the markets, by the way, aren't prepared for it either, because the markets have convinced themselves that somehow we'll muddle through. And unfortunately, you know, I think central banks, by the way, kind of realize. I mean, I can imagine when Janet Yellen found that she wasn't going to get reelected, she probably breathed a sigh of relief and thought, oh, thank God, now I can go take a break. It's not going to be on my watch.
Right. I mean, is that not right? I mean, nothing feels right when I look around and I look at people that aren't working, when I look at all the things that I see. That doesn't make sense. Yeah, they're making a lot of jobs of minimum wage. That's great. But of course, it's hard to live on minimum wage, especially when you don't have benefits to go with it. So there is real no solution here to the problem until the system flushes itself out. Would you agree or disagree with that?
No, I agree. Look, nothing feels real. There's an interesting paper that came out by, I think it was Larry Summers and Olivier Blanchard, who used to be the chief economist at the IMF, where they showed that if you look at GDP per capita amongst working age adults, so 18 to 64, actually, based on the last 10 years and projections going forward, GDP per capita over the dozen years from the credit crunch will actually have gone up by less than the dozen years from the start of the Great Depression. That probably tells you everything. That tells you everything you need to know.
Dr. Bob Swarup, you are always awesome. I certainly appreciate having you on today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Todd. Always a pleasure being on.
That was Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global, also the author of Money Mania, Panic, Swooms, and Busts. Go buy the book. Help him out. We got to get his GDP going. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bob Horwitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you later at The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Horwitz. Good night, everybody.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.